All right, so this is what we studied in this first verse here. The idea of completeness and how we are incomplete. And the next verse, mantra one, is going to follow very logically from the invocation and is going to start giving us, not start actually, is going to pronounce the recipe to regain our completeness. This is what mantra one is about. Mantra one is going to describe that the prominence of the Lord, that because He is the one from whom everything comes, the consequence of this is that He is the controller and He is the owner. Because everything comes from Him, this was the principle. In the invocation, we learn a principle. And in mantra one, it's also a principle, but it's a principle which is an application of the fact that the Lord is complete and that everything comes from Him. It's pronouncing a law. What is the law? Everything animate or inanimate that is within the world is controlled and owned by the Lord. So we are going to study this here. Let us sing this part. You remember, we are in the first part of Sri Upanishad, so let us sing this part before we start this. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Ishavasyamidam Sarvam Yatkinchat Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha Magridha Kasya Svidhanam Kurvanne Veha Karmani Jivishetchatam Samaha Evam Tvainanyate Tosti Na karma lipyate nare asuriya namate loka andhena tamasarita tamste pritya vigachanti eke chat mahanojana. Can someone turn down a little bit this fan here? It makes me lose my voice. So who wants to read the translation to this mantra one? Yes? So this is a statement, it's actually a law. And you can find this verse, or almost exactly the same verse, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this verse is pronounced by Swayambhuva Manu. Why? Why Swayambhuva Manu? He is known as the father of mankind. And what kind of shastras does he give, Swayambhuva Manu? Huh? The Manu Samhita means these are laws. He's pronouncing the laws for mankind. So you will find this verse In the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, first chapter, 10th verse. And the way Manu speaks this verse, he says, Atma Vasyamidam Sarvam, instead of saying Isha. But the Atma and the Isha are the same. He's talking of the Vibhu Atma. There are two kinds of Atma. Anu Atma, the Jiva, and the Vibhu Atma, the Paramatma. So this Vibhu Atma is the Isha. Atma Vasyamidam Vishvam, he says. Instead of Jagat, he says Vishvam, which is the universe. Yat kinchit jagatyam jagat tena chaktena bhunjita magrida kasyasrit dhanam. Prabhupada translates, within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his super soul feature, is present everywhere. Wherever there are animate or inanimate beings. Therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. So you are welcome to go to the Bhagavatam and read the purport, because Srila Prabhupada nicely explains many different things in this purport which relate to what we are discussing in Sri Ishopanishad. 8.1.10. So this verse, in this statement, there are actually three different parts. We can try to understand. Isha vasyamidam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. Everything animate or inanimate, what is this animate or inanimate? You have to raise your hands, because when you speak all together, then I hear nothing. And others also don't hear. Yes? The superior and inferior energy of the Lord. Yes, in Bhagavad Gita we hear the same thing, that Krishna has energies, and there is the para and the apara prakriti. Srila Prabhupada uses another word, he says organic and inorganic. What is inorganic? It is the apara, it is matter. Matter. When the soul is not within matter, then it is inorganic, inanimate. And when the soul enters matter, then it becomes organic. It's organic is the same root as organized. Organization. And because the soul comes, then the matter organizes itself and evolves into different forms of life. So the Lord controls both matter and spirit. He controls matter in an inorganic state, and it also controls all the living entities. So he controls, which also means that he is not controlled. He is beyond the defects and is not subject to the laws of his energies. In fact, he is not subject to this law. This law is for whom? It's for us. It's particularly for human beings. It's not even for animals. Why is it not for animals? They have no consciousness? A little bit, no? Why is it not for animals? Yeah, they don't incur sin whatever they do, but why they don't incur sin? They don't have free will, yes. They don't encroach on the laws of nature, the animals. They do not. They do not encroach. Prabhupada said, you give grass to the tiger, and you give flesh to the cow. So they have their own ways of living. They have their own quota, which we will read about. and they don't encroach. But human beings are different. They are more intelligent. In fact, they are over-intelligent. And they have free will. So these laws are for mankind. They need to hear this because they are free to choose to follow the laws of nature or not follow the laws of nature. Animals, they have no choice. And because they have no choice, they don't break the laws and therefore they do not incur sin. But we do. So the first statement is that the Lord is the predominator, He is the controller, and He is the owner. And He controls everything and everyone. The way He controls the jivas is through His energy, through His material energies. There is the Lord, there is the material energy, and under that there is the jiva. The jiva is in illusion, believes that he is controlling matter. That's what the scientists are trying to do. They are trying to control matter, but they cannot. Because matter is a huge aggregate of energy, and the jiva is very tiny. So we can control something. I can catch this and I can control it and I can throw it at somebody's head. I can do that. But what I cannot control is the reaction. I could control how I would hit the person, but I can't control how it's going to hit me back. So in the end, we are completely controlled. Only in illusion, we think that we control. So this is the first statement. Now, the second statement is, whatever is within the universe. So two things, another thing I want to say is that this law applies to humans, and it applies particularly it means that it applies within the universe. This kind of law doesn't exist in Vaikuntha. The Isha is the Lord of the material universe. He is not the Lord of the transcendental world. He is the Lord of the material universe. He is Lord Vishnu. Of course, and ultimately, Vishnu is Krishna. But Krishna controls this world through Vishnu. And Vishnu controls this world through the material energy. So the next portion, the third part of the law, is tena tyaktena bhunjita, which means one should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota. In other words, what Manu is explaining, or what the Isha Upanishad is explaining, is that whereas the Lord is the proprietor, the living entity is not. At least, is not the original proprietor, is not the proprietor of everything. Actually, he is only a secondary proprietor. The Lord is the enjoyer, and is the owner. And it's not that the living entity doesn't have a right. Actually, this verse gives the right to the living entities. What is your right? What is our right? We have a right over what has been given to us. We have a quota, and over that we have some rights. We have some right of ownership, but it is a secondary ownership. It's never primary. It's like when we are taught when we join ISKCON that on the books we don't write our name. What do we write? In care of. This book is in care of Shivaratri. But if you write on the book Shivaratri, then you are encroaching on the Isha Vasyamidam principle. because this book does not actually belong to us. It has been given to us. Yeah, it has been given to us, and it has been given to us as to take care of it. How does the Lord maintain the universe? We said it's self-maintained, but certain things we also help maintaining. We maintain them. So the Lord has established this, that and Srila Prabhupada explains what is the quota. So in nature, we see the example of the cow. The cow eats grass and she produces milk. So because she produces the milk, the cow could think, it's my milk. But the cows in general, they don't drink milk. Only the calf, in the very beginning, she gives a little quota to the calf. But the cows, they could go around and drink milk from each other, no? They could do that. But they don't do that. It's very rare. Once in a blue moon, you'll see a cow is gonna try to drink milk from another cow. But usually they don't drink milk. Why? It is not their quota. By the arrangement of nature, their food is grass. That is their quota. And they know it intuitively. So this is just an example to show that it's not just because we manufacture something that it is meant for us and that we can put our stamp on it. What is another example Prabhupada gives to show that we are not the owner? Yes?
He says that, like, for instance, our house, so many different materials. We can labor so hard to put those materials together to create the house. Ultimately, we didn't create the materials themselves. They're only made by Krishna.
Okay. So we have a house, and you know what people do when they build a house, right? First thing they do is put their name on it. Mr. John or Mr. Giridhari, they put their name on it. At least non-devotees. That's their house. In fact, they spend their whole life just to build one house, to gather enough money to build a house and put their name on it. And they believe in private property. They put a dog inside to guard the house. But the fact is that whose is this house? They say, well, I worked hard. I bought all the bricks one by one. I bought them with the money that I made. But yes, but who made the bricks? They were made in the factory. Yes, and where did they get the bricks from in the factory? So bricks are made from earth, they are made from water, and they are made from fire. Right? It's a combination. And where did you get that from? So the owner of the factory is also going to say, well, I stole it from the hill over there. I got it from the hill. So who made the hill? Then you come to the conclusion that yes, in fact, whatever materials we can, the understanding of being the secondary proprietor is that we cannot create. We can only transform. We can transform the energy. We can use the energy, but we can't create it. There was a story, a funny story, just to make you laugh. There was a man who was very envious of God. Why was he envious of God? He said, everyone worships him. Everyone worships him, all human beings, they worship him. And why they worship God? Because God made man. They know he's the creator. So they feel some kind of gratitude towards him and they worship him. You know? So he said, he decided that I will also make a man. I will also create a man. And he was very adamant and bold and everything about it. And he went to see God. And he told him all these things in his face. People worship you, they will also worship me. They worship you because you created the human body. Now I will also create a man. God said, go ahead. And then he said, yes, and I heard how you created man. God said, yes, how? He said, yeah. He said, you took a handful of dust. And from that handful of dust, you created man. I will also create from a handful of dust. God said, go ahead. So the man was very angry. So just in front of God, he went down and he took a whole handful of dust. And then he closed his hand and he said, I will also create. I will create man from this handful of dust. And he turned around and he started walking away. And God patted him on the shoulder and said, psst. He said, leave this dust here. It's my dust. You go make your own dust. So this is the idea here, that we did not make the dust that produced everything in the world. We have no right to claim property over anything. But we have a quota. Each living entities, they have a quota in quantity and in quality. Tigers eat meat and cows eat grass. A big man can eat 20 chapatis, but a small man, if he eats 20, then he incurs the laws of nature. Big man eats 20 chapati, he remains slim. Small man eats 20 chapati, he starts putting on weight because he has encroached the laws of nature. Now, what is the quota of human beings? We should know our quota, otherwise we'll get in trouble. What is our quota? Did you read? Yes? According to our karma. According to our karma? What is the human's quota? Yes?
Vegetarian food can be offered to God.
Okay, vegetarian food. So, yes, if we study our body, we will understand that we are meant to be vegetarian mostly. But you have added it should be offered to God. Yeah, Prabhupada said it's not enough to be a vegetarian for human beings. So, offered to God. So, what does that mean? What is our quota?
What is set aside for us by the Lord?
Yeah, but what is it? What is a specific quota of human beings? Devotional service. Yeah, that's our quota. Prabhupada said our quota is to recognize the Lord. Because remember, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that we have in common with the animals. Right? So yes, we have a food quota, but it's not even true that we have a food quota. Our quota is to serve Krishna. Animals can't do that. Our quota, knowledge is defined in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter. When you study the 13th chapter, you will see. What is knowledge? Well, you should know the Kshetragya. You should know who is the master, who is the knower of the field. So this is the quota of human beings. For us, there is no need. Prabhupada says very heavy statements in this purport. He said, there is no need to endeavor for your maintenance. If you perfectly understand that Krishna is the maintainer, you just serve him and he will maintain you. to work hard like a donkey, that is not the quota of man. This is the quota for stupid men who have not understood that you just have to serve Krishna and he will maintain you. People have to maintain themselves through work, through karma, because they have not understood that Krishna is the controller and is the owner. If one works for him, then he will clothe us, he will feed us, directly he will maintain us. And if we do not recognize his proprietorship, if we do not offer everything to him, then yes, we will have to work hard. We'll have to work very hard. But if we recognize him fully and work for him, then our working like an ass is finished. Krishna can either maintain us indirectly or directly. Indirectly means we work to maintain ourselves. That's his indirect way to maintain us. And direct maintenance means we don't work to maintain ourselves. We never do anything to maintain ourselves. Everything we do is Krishna's service. We serve him. And in the process of serving him, he maintains us. So this is this principle here, that actually we must go towards that perfection of understanding that we are fully dependent on Krishna and he can fully take care of us. This is the complete understanding. So the duty in human life is not to try to maintain ourselves the way, as well as we can. Although we will study in Ishopanishad that in the initial stage of spiritual awakening, we have to continue working in some way because our understanding is not clear. It's not complete. We don't trust. We are insecure. If I don't work, if I don't get my salary in the end of the month, the question is, what will happen? That question is there. And as long as that question is there in my mind, I have to work. Because otherwise I'll flip. But once we begin practicing the understanding that Krishna is the Lord and is the maintainer of everybody, as we perfect this understanding, then our insecurity will go down. And our faith will grow, our insecurity will go down, and we'll be able to depend on him. So this is the second aspect here, that the Lord is the owner of everything. We are only the secondary owner, and of a certain area, not of everything. And the third part of this quota here, of this law, is Magridha Kasya Svidhanam, which means one should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. Krishna is giving us a certain amount of things. So what does it mean we should not accept other things? One meaning Prabhupada explains is we should offer everything to the Lord and accept prasadam. And this is one of the things we learn when we take initiation, is we should eat only prasad. Magrida kasya svidhanam, nothing else. If you accept something else than prasadam, something which is not offered, then you break the law. And we will read in the next two verses, verse 2 and 3, they will explain the consequences of following or not following this Ishavasya principle. This is called the Ishavasya principle. One, the Lord is the owner of everything. Second, I am only the secondary owner, and that only. My rule is only over what Krishna has given me. And basically, my main right is to serve him. And I should offer everything to him and partake of prasadam. Prasadam, that is my quota. as a human being. Devotional service, that is my quota as a human being. So we are forbidden to claim false proprietorship. So in your homework, for example, there is a question. Should I take somebody's soap without asking? Should I? Soap. You know, you go to the bathroom or you want to take bath and you don't have a soap and you see next to you somebody, the bedding is there and there is a soap. Everything is there, the toothbrush, the soap, the clothes, everything, camera, you don't have it. So, do you have a right to take? No. Krishna has designed things in such a way that he has given certain things to each jiva. And it's in their care. And if we start taking from others, can we take or can we not take? We cannot take at all. Permission. So we are secondary controllers. Right? We have control over our things. And if we want to take something from someone else, then we should consider, no, it is under the care of that person. It's their quota. I can get it if that person agrees. Otherwise, I get involved. Once I had a near-death experience, and it is always we hear that when we have a near-death experience, what happens at the time of death is that we see all our life as a flashback, very fast. You see everything you have done all your life. And this is how, wherever our attention goes, then we take body according to that. If we are not sufficiently thinking of Krishna, we'll get attracted to something, someone, somewhere. And that's it, next birth. So I was having this thing happening, you know, that I started seeing everything from the time of my birth. You know, tuck, 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 very fast, flashes, flashing. You did this, that, and then you did this, and this, and that, and this, and that, and this, and that. So many things. And at the same time, I was getting the understanding. This was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong. You took a pin. A pin? Oh, come on, a small pin. Yeah, you took it. You took a pin. I remember that. You know, you took this, you took that, you took this, you took that, you took this. Because we do that all the time. There are so many things that we do without realizing. You know, because we are so imperfect and so unconscious of this Ishavasya principle that, who cares? I'm sure he has another soap. I go with the soap. You know, I need a pin to put here and there. I get the pin. You know, I didn't ask. But everything is the quota of somebody. And it was so scary. By the time I finished seeing this thing, I understood, I'm going to hell! Then I took the photo of Prabhupada and the photo of my Gurudev, and I was like, I was really, I understood that now I'm in the hands of destiny. I've done so many wrong things. You lied. I just said that I didn't. No, just a little. No, you lied. You stole. You did this, you did that. Really? I'm sorry, yeah, that was it. I'm very sorry. I won't do it again. I'm very sorry. So this is an infallible law. This is the law of karma. This is the law that rules over this world. And we should know that law. And be very serious about it. And we are so inattentive that therefore we should really chant Krishna's name very seriously, because we keep making mistakes and we don't even see them. The kind of stuff that I was seeing during that flashback were things like, come on, you know, I forgot everything about that. Yeah, but I did not say the Paramatma. Shh. So this is a very serious law. According to this law, we either rise or fall. And so now I would just like to ask everyone to think about what is their personal quota. What are these things that they have personally with which they can serve Krishna? What is our quota? What do we have? Can you think of things? And don't think, oh, I shouldn't. Like, I would think, naturally will mean, what are some good qualities that you have? What kind of intelligence you have? What kind of body we have? We should know our field. We should know our quota. Because we can only serve Krishna with our own quota. We can't serve Krishna with something else. We can only serve Krishna with what we have. It doesn't matter what we have. It matters what we do with it. That's very important to understand. Some people were born millionaire. This is what they have to serve Krishna. It's money. Some people were born with the power to sing. This is what they have. They have no money. They sing for Krishna. Please switch it off. And please note down in your diary for tomorrow, we are 27 and we are hungry. We want sweets. We'll break Ekadasi tomorrow. Today we are all fasting. We need a lot. So please bring sweets.
Big one.
Your mercy. Our quota. So this is very important to understand. I will give you an example to illustrate what usually we do. In France, I was born in France. In France, there is a lot of grass, green grass, because it's a little cold, not as hot as here. Very good for cows. And so the grass grows. It grows this high. Very high grass. And the cows, they graze in the fields. When they graze in the fields in France, they don't even have to put their head down. As they walk, the grass comes, you know, usually they have short legs, the cows in France. So the grass comes right at the level of their mouth. As they walk, they cut the grass. They are nicely fat, they are round, very sturdy, very round cows, very happy cows, and they keep eating grass all day. There's no end. It's not like in India that they keep walking all day looking for the grass. In France, they just sit in the grass all day and they eat. And they're very fat. They have a huge udders and they give like 30 liters of milk for breakfast. And same in the evening. So much milk because they eat so much grass. So there was one cow that lived in one field. And she was eating grass. So she was walking, and she was closing her eyes in ecstasy. The grass was so sweet, and there was so much grass. So she was eating. And one day what happened? She was happy. And one day what happened? She came to a fence. So she raised her head to see, what is this? She couldn't go further. And she saw on the other side of the fence, what was there?
Taller grass.
So much grass. And another cow. And the other cow, her eyes were closed and she was eating up the grass. So the first cow started thinking, oh, I went fortunate I am. The grass looks so much more green on the other side of the fence. What a lucky cow is the other cow. But actually, for one who would look at the two situations, they would see that the grass was the same on both sides. But just before, because it was not in her own field, she started thinking, oh, it's so much more grass in the other field. So much more green. What a pity I can't go on the other side. So this is what we usually spend our life doing. Krishna has given us a body, a human body. He has given us intelligence. He has given us qualities. He has given us so many different features, abilities, skills. But we are always looking towards the other cow. Oh, she sings so much nicer than me. Oh, he is so much intelligent than me. Oh, this one knows so many shlokas. Oh, look at that one, how much money he has. And we spend our whole life looking beyond the fence, never realizing what is within our own enclosure. So this mantra says, Ma grida kasya siddhanam. Stop looking over the fence. Look in your own field, what you have. Look at your own self. Find out your qualities. Whatever they are, find your skills, find everything about yourself. And Ishavasyam idam sarvam, it's not yours, it's Krishna's. You offer that to him. And if you offer that to him, he will increase your quota. He will increase your quota. Yeah. He will give you more qualities, more intelligence, more everything. So this is very important to understand. Otherwise, Magrida kasya siddhama nama, Prabhupada says, it means do not envy. The main disease in this world, Prabhupada said, the envy and prem and love, they are the two different, the two opposites. In this world, the law is envy. And in the spiritual world, the law is love. In the spiritual world, everything for Krishna. In the material world, everything for whom? Me. Why not me? Why him? Why not me? Why him? So we must accept. We should not endeavor to gain. We should just use whatever we have and we should offer that to Krishna. So therefore my question was, write down for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, what is it that Krishna has given you? Special. What has Krishna given you to serve him? Please write. Don't look over the fence. Find your own. What has Krishna given you? What kind of qualities? What kind of strengths? Now, in the quota, there are also weaknesses. Some weaknesses may also be there. Personal, yes. Personal, whose else? Do you know other people's... We try usually to know other people's qualities, especially their weaknesses, their faults. No, yours. What are your strengths? You can also see what are your weaknesses. What are your anarthas? That's also part of your quota. But interesting, we should know both. Try to know what are your qualities. What is your education? What has Krishna given you? Has he given you money? Has he given you intelligence, memory? Has He given you a healthy body? What are your desires that could be put in the service of Krishna? What are your skills? What have you learned so far? What has Krishna given you?
He gave too much.
Yes, they say, when Krishna wants to give, we don't have enough hands to receive. The problem is usually we don't put our hands out.
So we must focus on the main thing.
Right. Devotional service. Yeah, He has given us devotional service, but I'm saying what He has given us to perform that service. We should be grateful to Krishna. He has given us so many things. And above all, what is the best thing that Krishna has given you? All right, we are going to hear now a little bit what it is that Krishna... And don't be shy, it's not yours. They are good students. Actually, not even just students, they are teachers. They assist us in our teaching. So, all right, let us see. Who wants to say what is their quota in this life? Nobody wants to say. Yes, Navadvip, what did you get?
A healthy body.
You got a healthy body.
And at least I can speak four languages. I can preach in that language.
So you can preach in four languages. Okay, you can sing.
Limited money for which I should not hanker and enjoy so many things.
Natural renunciation He has given you.
And above all, He gave the association of devotees.
Okay, very nice. Okay, and yes, what did He give you?
Friends in the form of devotees, in the form of prasad.
Okay, some in education. Which kind of education?
Bachelor of Commerce as well as Bachelor of Law.
Law, yeah. So you can, what can you do for Krishna now?
You mean?
Huh?
I do assist the local respond and then get in the media.
Yeah, right. You can put that education in the service of defending Krishna. Yes. Okay. Who else? Kavita, what do you have? You what? You can sing. You have a voice. Okay. Yes. Enough money. You can beg from Kavita. He has given enough money. Okay. Just enough. Don't ask for too much. Okay. He has given you? What is that?
Consciousness.
Oh, Krishna consciousness. Yes. Anyone found some specific qualities? What did you get?
Yes.
With this body, he gave me some skills like management skills.
Management skills he gave, okay.
Or understanding things quickly and methodically.
Okay. So you can, can you do with that? So you can manage?
Manage the temples, understand and solve any problems and any issues.
Nice. Okay, nice. So you can preach also. You can play instruments. Okay, that's very nice. Okay. All right. Who else? Qualities? Yes?
There's some nightmares like this, uncontrolled mind and lusty mind.
Uncontrolled lusty mind. Oh, yeah, that's the, this is also part of the quota. We have to deal with it. Yeah, yeah, good, good. Okay. Who else, Mesa? What do you have in your department? In your field?
Okay, ability to concentrate.
It's not yours.
Yes.
It's Krishna's. Glorification of Krishna.
Ability to concentrate.
To concentrate, yes.
Writing skills.
Okay, philosophy and languages.
Memory.
So you can study.
Yeah. Mm. I was still thinking about how to be more active.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we should think how to use whatever Krishna has given us. Because remember, this life is very short. And we can't use what he has given to others. We have to use what he has given to us. We can't spend our life regretting that we are not somebody else. We have to be who we are. Prabhupada told us, don't come back. So if we are not going to come back, we have to use what we have in Krishna's service. Yes, who else? Gaurangi?
I like to cook.
Cooking, okay.
Gardening,
yeah. Okay.
I'm going to flowers.
Wow.
And I also like to make jewelry for the Lord.
Make jewelry?
Yeah.
So you're a little bit of an artist, we discover. Yes.
And I'm very lazy.
Lazy, okay. So you do the gardening tomorrow and you eat the remnants of the day before, okay. Weak body. Weak body. Okay. So we should know our field. Who else wants to say something? Sundar Nityananda?
Krishna has given me the holy name.
Okay.
And the tongue to chant the holy name.
Tongue to chant the holy name.
He also has given me the intelligence to understand the rarity of this human form of life. The importance of pursuing consciousness.
Okay. So you are a convinced person.
To a certain extent.
To some extent, okay. Yeah. Any specific quality?
Teaching skills.
Teaching skills, good. Okay. So you can preach. Okay, yeah, if you have some conviction, then you can preach. He's a good preacher. Okay, so we should encourage. See, the process of Krishna consciousness, as we see it presented in the Upanishad, will tell us that, you know, the process of Krishna consciousness is a process of empowerment. It's a process of development. So we need to find ourselves, and when we preach to others or when we train others, we should not impose upon them some other people's thoughts, but we should help them to acknowledge their field, their qualities, their abilities, and we should train them in the mentality of using it for Krishna. Okay. I have my quota here. I've made my quota. I wrote things like, for me, I have Guru's order. That's my quota. To be based in India, to preach in Maharashtra, and to teach. I have my qualities and talents. Well, hearing, speaking, singing, writing, cooking. And I don't know about anything else. I mess up everything else. So I have to do that, and I have to find a way to do it. So that means when you know your quota, you have to find the place, you have to find the circumstance where your qualities can be used. If you stick yourself in a place where your qualities cannot be used, then you will be miserable, incomplete. So you have to find your place.
Sometimes, like the main temple says, they, you know, we should do the service what's needed, even though it's not necessarily the service that we're best at or we want to do.
Yeah.
So how does that fit?
I think we will study that a little further during the Upanishad. So there are two things. Well, one thing is you can do that, but usually if you are very transcendental to your material qualities, then you can do that all the time, you don't mind. If you are a little conditioned, you can only do it for some of the time. It's called emergency duty. But your regular duty in general is best if it's according to your qualities. You will find it easier. It will flow easier. Yes. All right. And we have anarthas. I was thinking Prashanta is lazy. So therefore, I made a schedule of intense, constant traveling. So I don't have time to sit around. And Prashanta has a controlling nature. So therefore, she has taken managerial duties. These are anarthas. For me, I think they are anarthas. But we have to engage the things in Krishna's service in such a way that they will burn and go away. All right. Something more Krishna says in this, in relation to claiming false proprietorship. Prabhupada calls this verse one of the peace formula. What is the peace formula in the Bhagavad Gita? 529, yes, 529, which means that the solution for peace is to recognize, for human beings, for human society, is to recognize the prominence of the Lord and to work for Him in the form of yajna. So this is the same verse here. This is also the peace formula. We must accept Krishna as the predominator and we must use everything in His service and not try to get things for ourselves. We should be satisfied with what Krishna has given us and just engage then in His service. So this principle is the basis of peace in society. And Prabhupada speaks of causes of unrest in society in relation to that by referring to the communists and the capitalists. What this has to do with the Ishavasya principle? Prabhupada is presenting the communists and the capitalists here. What do they have to do with the Ishavasya principle? Yes?
Because they're fighting over what to do with the money.
They are fighting over the resources.
Yeah.
Each thinking, it's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stolen bread. Okay, there's the story of stolen bread. What is the story of stolen bread? This is in Russia. They know this story in Russia. When the Communist Party was taking over Russia, before the Communist Party took over Russia, the Russians, they were actually very religious. They were Orthodox Christians. They were very religious. So on Sunday, they would go to the church. And there is a prayer, I don't know whether the Orthodox pray like that, but there is a prayer in Christianity which is, Father who is in heaven, holy be your name. It's a very nice prayer. But there is one sentence which says, please give us our daily bread. It says many things. Holy be your name. All praise to your name. They also believe in the name of God. But they also ask that please give us our daily bread. So, the Communist Party, they would park their cars outside the church. And they would bake bread. They would make lots of loaves of bread. And they would sit outside the churches. And when the people would come out of the mass, they would come out of the church, then the communists would call them and say, come here. So, you asked for bread? Did you get any? And then they were saying, and at that time there was big economic crisis in Russia. There was poverty. There was famine. There was no bread. So they were saying, no, we didn't get any bread. Then they would open the doors of the trucks and they would distribute free bread. And in this way, the stupid, you know, brain of the common man started thinking that, who is God? Who is God? Lenin. The Communist Party. Because God is the one who gives the bread. And obviously it's coming from there. So they thought that they took to communism. They took to the Communist Party, they took to communism thinking that this is a good way to organize things. Right? What they did not understand, what they were fools, what they did not understand is that they had prayed for bread. And as soon as they came out, they got it. But they did not know this, that the one who makes the bread is not the owner of the bread. It was stolen bread. They had stolen from Krishna. They had taken the ownership of the bread and they had stolen it. They had said, we are the one who provide the bread, not God. But actually God was the one who had given us the bread. So, this is the failure of all the political parties. If we want to know the failure of all the political parties in the world, this is the failure. What is the failure? Is that they recognize someone else as the owner. They give the ownership, the proprietorship over the land, over everything to someone else than Krishna. So, the capitalists, for example, for the capitalist, who is the owner? The corporations? Yes, it's true. What is a corporation? Bunch of individuals, yes, we are going in. What do capitalists believe in?
Private
property. The capitalistic philosophy is that each and every individual is an owner. Right? And this is very prominent when you go to capitalistic country, you see fence everywhere. Private property with the dog. So this is capitalism, to believe in private property. Now, what is communism then? Who is the owner? The state, the government, the party. The party is the owner. In communism, the party is the owner. And they all share, but it's so-called. But actually the party is the owner. Mm? And let's go through some other ones. In fascism, you know what is fascism? Yeah, you know, right? What is fascism?
The political regime.
Dictatorship. Yes, it's dictatorship. So in dictatorship, who is the owner of everything? The dictator. The man in power, he is the boss. and he's the owner of everything, and if you don't agree, he cuts your head, because that's his. He's the owner of everyone and everything. And what about in socialism? Who is the owner in socialism? Sorry? The public means the communities. The public, the communities. The communities, they are the owner. Yes. And what about in anarchy? You know anarchy? Who is the...
No government.
There's no owner, there's no government, there's nothing, no law. Anarchy means with no law, no property, no owner, nothing. So you can see it all, this is very important verse. Because all these parties, and when they try to rule, when they get in power, they rule according to this principle, that the individual is the owner, the party is the owner. They rule according to this principle, and the result is?
Chaos.
Because that's the wrong principle. And what about monarchy? Who is the owner in monarchy? The king? It's God, yeah. In monarchy, monarchy is the perfect system. In monarchy, the king is not a dictator, he's a representative. He is managing the property of God. Right. So they are not monarchy, they are dictatorships. They call themselves monarchy, but they are not. The monarchy means that you recognize the ownership of God, and the king is the servant. You know, Prataparudra, he takes the broom and he cleans in front of Jagannath. That is a king. He's a servant of God. So, this is an overview here of this of this verse. Prabhupada said, human beings are not meant to quarrel like cats and dogs. They must be intelligent enough to realize the importance and aim of human life. Human life alone is a life of responsibility. This term responsibility is going to come up many, many times in the Upanishad. For human beings, the point is to recognize the Supreme Lord. He must offer everything for the Lord's service and partake only of the remnants of food offered to the Lord. Then in the last paragraph, Prabhupada explains, the root of sin is deliberate disobedience of the laws of nature. Through disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord, disobeying the laws of nature or the order of the Lord brings ruin to a human being. Conversely, one who is sober, who knows the laws of nature and who is not influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion, is sure to be recognized by the Lord and thus become eligible to go back to Godhead, back to the eternal home. So this last paragraph introduces the next two verses, which are going to deal with what happens if you follow and what happens if you don't follow. Therefore, it's one section, the laws of nature. One more thing I wanted to say. That this verse, in terms of understanding what kind of work we will be performing if we follow this verse is actually the basis of karma yoga. It is the basis of karma yoga. It is also the basis of bhakti, but in itself it is not bhakti. Because there's no question of love here. there is only a question of law. There is God, there is the living entity, and the living entity, if he follow, he must follow the law. So this is the law of karma, and by following this law, we enter the field of karma yoga. Karma means to act for oneself. And when we come to karma yoga, it means that we learn how to work for, how to dedicate at least one part of the quota we have of our property, of everything, to Krishna. This is the basis of sacrifice. And what kind of work is this? There is karma. There are three types of works which are described in the Bhagavad Gita. And we'll see one is karma, one is vikarma, and one is akarma. So what kind of work is this Ishavasya principle directing us towards? Akarma. Yes, akarma. Karma yoga means akarma. Karma means karma, and then there is vikarma. If you don't follow the law, then you get into vikarma. But if you follow it and you actually worship the Lord and you actually offer the things, then it will become vikarma. It will become akarma. There will be no reaction. So for tomorrow, you please read the next two verses, 2 and 3, both of them. And we will be studying those two verses tomorrow and completing the section. Well, bhakti means love. So did you see any love in here? No. So yes, but at the same time, bhakti is also based on this, but it's more evolved. Bhakti means, the first principle of bhakti is this, that we recognize Krishna and our position in relationship with him. So this is the basis of bhakti. This is why I said that this Ishopanishad is very important for us, because it sets a background, a philosophical basis for bhakti, for the practice of bhakti. It supports bhakti.
And it strengthens our character also, you know. Like you are telling what should be taken, what should not be.
Yeah.
We have to develop qualities also.
Yes.
If we remain bhakti and chanting and cheating and this thing, then other people will not be impressed.
No. No. Yes, this will make us into a dharmic person. Yes? Some other question? Yes? Is that what?
It's not only karma, right? Because you still want to use it for Krishna.
Yeah.
I have an intense desire to learn something for Krishna, even though I don't have it.
Meaning your desire is to serve. You have to understand what is the desire. When we talk of Magrida Kasya Siddhanam, it means that I see somebody is singing nicely. And I'm envious of that person because I can't sing nicely. So I want that quality. I want that quality because I also want to sing. I want that quality. So this is not the right thing. But if you desire to sing for Krishna and take inspiration in someone else who's also singing so nicely, and you take that person as a role model and you want to emulate the qualities of that person because you think, when that person sings, I think Krishna is pleased. You know? So I want to serve Krishna. Right? I want to serve him. So that's your desire. So it's a little different. We can catch others' qualities. That's why association is very important. So the desire should not be that I want to sing like this. No, the desire should be, I want to sing for Krishna. Oh my Lord, please allow me to sing for you, and like that. But if we quack like a frog, it's okay. You can sing privately for Krishna. You can sing privately for Krishna. So we should recognize our qualities. Sometimes our best quality is not singing. Sometimes it's playing instruments, writing music. Sometimes people write music, they don't know singing. So there are so many things that we can do. But you have to see what you desire. Do you desire the property of another? Or if you desire to serve Krishna, then that's good. Yes? Yes? Yeah, the difference? Yeah. You will study that in Bhagavad Gita, first six chapters. And I think it's coming tomorrow. But karma means to act. According to the instructions of the scriptures. Yeah. But the beneficiary is yourself.
How is this verse in a karma, not in karma? I mean, this is simply the instructions. It's not something we have to offer, we have to use the things, how to open the worship of God.
No, because here it recognizes the ownership of God. In karma, there is not really a conscious recognition of the ownership of God. It's just that I don't want to get the bad reactions. I've had enough of acting. Vikarma means acting whimsically, no law. I do what I want when I want. And then the idea is that after some time of being in that state of life, one should recognize that, why am I suffering? Because there will be, when we act whimsically, sometimes it may match the laws of nature, but many times it doesn't. So we break the law, and the result is we suffer. So when the person asks, why am I suffering? Then Krishna provides the answer, because you are breaking the laws. So then the question is, what are the laws? And then the person begins, in the Vedic view, the person begins following the Karmakandi scriptures, where there are the laws, where it tells you, okay, if you want to do this, this is how you do it. If you want to get that, you do it like this. You want to go to heaven, you want to enjoy, this is the way you get it. You want a child, this is the way you get it. You want property, this is the way you get it. And it instructs in all the laws, how to get things done, how to clean, how to cook, how to this, how to that, and how to perform the work, what kind of work corresponds to each kind of particular nature. All the laws of the varnas, the duties of the varnas, the duties of the ashrams, and you act accordingly. You don't break the law. You act accordingly. But in the karma, what it means, karma, it means that you will get a reaction. When you do karma, you get a reaction. You do something according to scripture to get the good result. So you get the good result. You get wealth, you get health, you get knowledge, you get a better birth, more evolved birth, in the next life you go to heaven. This is karma. And akarma, it means that you have understood that no matter how good the result that you get, it is never all good. There is always a little problem coming with it. Like you wanted, you know, you did all kinds of yagyas and all in order to take birth in a noble family with money, with intelligence and beauty. And you got it. The next birth, you take birth in a noble family with everything. So you may think, so what's the problem? So the Shastra said, the problem is birth, disease, old age, and death. Yeah, you got everything you wanted. You got the best of material life, but it's still material life. Still you had to take birth from the womb of a mother. What do the children do when they take birth? They cry. Is that a symptom of happiness? No. Taking birth is painful. So that's the welcome. Welcome into this world. Dukalayam. All those who are around the baby taking birth, they are very happy. They clap their hands. Well done, well done. You were born on an auspicious day, on an auspicious time. Well done. Everybody's happy except who? The baby. The baby is crying because he's suffering. The first air burns his lungs. The first milk burns his stomach. Everything. And then childhood in ignorance, falling down, growing teeth, have to go to school. Who likes that? Even whether he's rich or poor, he will have to go through that. And if he has good karma, he will have good health, so he won't fall sick. But old age, that he will not be able to avoid. And in the end, bas, end of the movie. We die. I don't want. Ishavasyamidam sarvam, not you. You are not the controller. So when one realizes that the result of karma involves maybe a great portion of happiness, but still some trouble. When the person realizes this, that birth is a trouble, death is the problem, old age is the problem, then he will ask the question, then, athato, brahma jigyasa, then he will ask, is there any way to avoid this whole thing altogether? Then the answer is yes, ishavasyamidam sarvam. You recognize the ownership of the Lord. You continue to follow the rules. It's the same rules. Those who follow karma, they follow varnashram. And those who follow karma yoga, they also follow varnashram. You follow the same rules, but when you work, you don't work for yourself. You dedicate, you recognize, you sacrifice at least a portion. That's karma. You sacrifice a portion to God. And by doing that, slowly, 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 you'll come to the realization that you are not this body. Okay. This is akarma. Akarma means you dedicate some, you don't enjoy. Ma grida kasya svidhanam has two meanings. One is recognize the quota of others, and the other one is to recognize that you are not the owner. So therefore you don't have the right to enjoy the fruit of your work. You have no right. Krishna says that in the Gita. You have the right to work. Oh, good. But you don't have the right to enjoy the fruit. So then why should I work? So therefore Krishna adds another line. And you have no right not to work. Otherwise, if somebody comes to know that, you know, you can work but you can't enjoy the fruit, they say, that's it, I sit under a tree. But Krishna said, no, there's one thing more. You also are not allowed not to work. Ah, really? Then that becomes really boring. So, but one who comes to bhakti, then he is free from all this. He can happily work. All right. Oh, I think we have to stop here. We'll take prasadam. You can ask your question tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Isha Upanishad ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanam.